Have your weekend breakfast
with Googs Mhlungu.
Let's walk the talk.
19 minutes after 7 o'clock, you are still on Weekend Breakfast on 702. Time for us to talk personal finance. And as always, joined by certified financial planner Paul Rulofser. And this week, we're speaking about the magic rule of 72. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Googs. And yes, it is a very magical number. Mm-hmm. Quite uncanny, actually, because if you take your financial calculator and test the outcomes of 72, you mm-hmm. are very, very, very close. Uh-huh. But it requires a little bit of mental arithmetic, so apologies to our listeners this morning. I know this is Sunday morning, it's supposed to be relaxing and things, but basically, if you take this number, mm-hmm. You can get a very good understanding of the value of your money into the future.
Uh-huh. So I would need to do that, for instance, if I'm saving for retirement. Is that where perhaps I'd use that number? Or if I'm saving for a child's education? Is that
Very much. It gives you the appreciation of how money works. So let's just take, if you put your money, we were speaking about money market accounts the other day, and mm-hmm. The current rate is around 6%. So let's take that 6% and divide it into 72. The outcome is 12. So what it says that if I put my money in a money market account at 6%, divided into 72 gives me 12. It means that in 12 years' time, my money will double in value. So it gives you an understanding that the higher the rate of interest, the quicker it will take to double. Because if my money market rate is now, say, 12%, and I divide that into 72, my outcome is 6. So it will take me 6 years to double my money at 12%, but 12 years to double it at 6%. And that I think, the uncanny side of all of that is if you took out a fancy financial calculator and did the same sort of inputs, you're going to be a few rand out. It's actually very, very accurate in the sense of understanding.
Why do we use the number 72? I'm still not sure why that specific number.
Well, again, in mathematical terms, I think it's one of those numbers that's divisible and is quite useful for a whole bunch of things. It's just that specific number itself comes out as a useful storyboard for understanding the doubling of money. That you can actually switch it around. You can actually then say, well, look, to understand how much the value of my money is going forward, in terms of inflation, our current inflation rate rounded up is 6% as well. So if you divide 6% into 72 and you've got your money sitting under a mattress, your money will halve in value every 12 years. So again, high inflation rate, the world is actually battling with this right now. And funny enough, we've got a few first world countries that have got higher inflation rates than us. And you can begin to see why they're very, very upset. I mean, Europe is not used to 7%, or as is the US, is not used to 7% as an inflation rate. Mm-hmm. So if we divide that into 72, we come out with a number nearly around 10. And they are halving the value of money every 10 years. We're halving our value every 12 years if we use 72 as an indicator. And that is why, just to get the appreciation of future value of money, we've got to get our inflation rates down. And the lower end of our inflation rate is 3. So if you divide 3 into 72, we're going to take a lot longer to halve our value in money. So it's a very useful thing to understand, even for youngsters. People just starting out in financial world and just trying to get an appreciation of money. Uh-huh. If we taught them this, we could see from the formula that the higher the rate of return, the quicker it takes to double our value, and the higher the inflation rate is, the quicker it takes to halve our value in money.
So, okay, if I understand correctly, if we're looking to see the future value of an investment, you take 72, you divide mm-hmm. it by the interest you will earn on your investment.
That's correct.
And then the number you get out is the number of years?
Yes.
Okay. So if I divide it now, and I get 6, that it will take me 6 years to double the investment.
That's correct. So if you divide 12, I'm assuming you've taken 12 as your anticipated interest rate.
Uh-huh.
You divide that into 72, the outcome is the number of years it will take to double your money.
Right. And so that by dividing by the interest rate, you can only ever figure out how long it would take to double the money.
That's correct.
It doesn't tell you anything else.
No. It doesn't tell you in 1s and 2 years and things like that. It's just, again, it's just an appreciative value of money. And the outcome is either going to be double or if you're using inflation, how long it's going to take to halve your value.
Okay. And so do you need to do both, for instance? So would you need to see how long it would take to double your money? And then,
well,
is it still
we could have fun with that too, because if you want to understand the actual real value of money, you know, now we talk a little more technical now. Obviously, you'd want to make sure that your money is maintaining a real value, which means that your inflation rate should be deducted from your interest rate. So let's just say that we have an interest rate of 5%, let's call it, say, 6%, and inflation is at 6. Well, there's going to be no difference in the future value of your money. You're keeping the money the same. But if you keep your money at a higher rate of interest than the inflation rate, you're actually going to grow it in real terms. So if I have an inflation rate of 6, I want my money to grow at a rate of, say, inflation plus 3 or 4%. So now you can go in and say, well, let's see how long it's going to take for me to get a real rate of return. So we subtract the one against the other and divide that into 72, and that'll tell me how long it takes to get a real rate of return. But now we're getting a little technical, and I didn't really want to lose my listeners this morning in terms of you know, technicalities. But
yeah.
I think the main issue here is just to look at this number and say, you know, if I'm going to invest in the bank, I'm getting a return of 6. It's going to take me 12 years to take my 10,000 rand to 20,000 rand.
Mm.
You know, and again, we want to keep very, very clear that inflation does harm the value of our money. And we welcome the Reserve Bank. It did some very good, bold moves by increasing the interest rates recently so that we would then try and pull back this high inflation we've got, because our inflation rate is 5.9 right now.
Uh-huh.
And they want to pull that back, so they put interest rates up. So now we've got some understanding of what this current inflation rate is going to do with our money in the future. But we also now know that the money market rates, that the interest rates have just pushed up, we're going to see how much time it's going to take for our money to grow.
We do have an SMS, not quite about the magic rule of 72, but the SMS asks, can you please explain the 120% rule applicable to endowments?
Okay. So the endowment is actually a regulated investment. You have to invest with it in 5 years. Okay, and then after 5 years, your proceeds are tax-free. But inside the endowment, there is a rule that says that you are only allowed whatever additional amounts of money you put inside that endowment. There's a specific amount that will be tax-free, and then anything above that, it actually extends that period. So the 120 rule actually points to the extended period. If you go above 120% of your current contributions, you now take yourself outside this period of tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
So you extend it. So it's a very technical point. The point is, however, in an endowment, you can only draw out what you put in and to a maximum of 5% compounded interest during that five-year period. So very technically, it speaks to an amount or a ceiling that your endowment is entitled to be tax-free within.
Okay. We have another question on WhatsApp about a different thing. It's from Domfuti, who asks, is it wise to withdraw the profits when a company releases their dividends and leave the initial investment?
Ooh. Well, it depends on the investment. It depends on the company. If you've got a long-term view, generally dividends are useful because when they come out from the company, they're tax-free. So if you're using it to support or live off in terms of your monthly income, you know, it's a useful barrier. But where you can really get a benefit from it is that if you are in a position where you can reinvest the dividends to buy more shares and start getting a sort of compounded return on it, That could be very useful. But it's horses for courses for you. It depends on the share itself, your anticipation of its future value as well. You know, you've got to keep your shares to understand how the company's performing. Mm-hmm. But generally what happens with dividends is they are extracted. They come out of the investment and they're paid either quarterly or half yearly or even annually. And people use that as some form of extra savings or some form of income for that matter. And the theory is that the more consistent those dividends are, the more attractive the share is. So therefore, it probably has a higher potential for growth in terms of its value. So high-paying dividend shares generally have a growth in them too, which means that you can sell those shares for a higher value sometime in the future.
Another question here about how onerous is the process through SARS to increase my foreign investment amount to have a bigger limit than the single discretionary amount?
Well, I don't know if I understand. Do you want to just read that quickly to me again?
Sure. It says, how onerous is the process through SARS to increase my foreign investment amount to have a bigger limit than the single discretionary amount?
Oh, well, there again, you know, those discretionary limits or the limits for SARS are set in the budget. And the dividends are controlled very differently too. Foreign dividends get us a lower inclusion rate than local capital gains does. So if the question's leaning to foreign, we only get a small amount off the foreign gains that we make in terms of tax. But on the local front, we still have this inclusion rate of 40,000 on capital gains as well. So I think the question probably points to how difficult it is. Well, it's not actually SARS who sets that. It's actually the budget proposals that are set by the Minister of Finance. And he's going to look at the taxation of it. And I don't think that he's has the appetite to give us higher tax breaks on foreign investments rather than local ones. He'd want us to obviously invest more locally here. So if I think if the question points to, you know, why can't SARS do it, I think it's more a question of the budget and its proposals and how they want to see the revenue collection in South Africa. And generally, the foreign investments are given a less you know, tax breaks than local ones do, if we're talking about capital gains in particular.
Mm. Paul, always a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you very much for your time.
No, thanks, Guru.
Thank you so much.
You too.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Certified financial planner Paul Roelofse joining us this morning to talk about the magic of the number 72. And take